So I'm going to be talking today, along with Mary, about our, ultimately, about our youth missions. But in order to do that, I want to provide some context today by talking about our young people's kind of path through Christian development. And so what I will say as I kind of kick off is, as the saying goes, you know, every young person is different and individual mileage may vary, but I certainly will be drawing from my own experiences both as a father and as a youth leader. You know, so if you think about elementary school, and by the way, I can't stand still. It makes me really nervous if I stand still, so I'm going to move around. I hope that doesn't freak everybody out. But, you know, when our kids are young, right, they're going to Sunday school, and they're getting those great Old Testament stories, Daniel in the Technicolor Dreamcoat, you know, Noah in the Ark, David and Goliath, right? And through those stories, they're beginning to learn Christian values, right? And that's a great thing. And similarly, right, during parts of the year, they begin learning about Jesus and what he did and where he came from. And we have the little tradition where we move the, you know, Mary and Joseph, and we start to teach them the narrative of the Christmas story, for instance. And in all those cases, right, we're starting to build some inventory of understanding, maybe not of how it all fits together, right, but we're at least beginning to feed them with what it is to be a Christian, and what do we believe, and what's important to us. And that's a great and important thing, right? But at the same time, our children are really concrete, right, at that stage. And so trying to understand these really abstract things, like Jesus doesn't stay dead, right? And that's Gail lets out the balloon, right? And everybody's like, whoa, you know, those are really difficult to comprehend, right, for our younger children. And, you know, during that phase, we all as parents are role models, right? We're role models to our own youth, and as our own youth move along, we become role models to the other youth within the church. Middle school, it starts to an interesting transition, right? So you've got the kids start to move away a little bit from their parents, and they start to grow and develop in new ways. They begin to think independently, and their friends gain importance and influence. For those of you that are a little older, middle school is now the time when most of our kids get phones. And then after they get a phone, the next thing that they want is Instagram. And you're like, oh gosh, I don't want to give them Instagram. And then the next thing that they want is Snapchat. And then they want and on down the list, right? And all of these different resources, while they can provide wonderful things and connection, they also introduce complexity. Right, and they introduce social influence, which can be really challenging for our kids. Life gets busier, right? In middle school, our kids start, you know, whether they're athletes or performers or academics or all of the above, right? Our kids' lives start to get very busy. And then towards the end of middle school, as if there's not enough going on, we get hormones, which is an exciting and interesting part of things, right? So from a faith perspective, right, there starts to be some collisions with what they're learning on Sunday morning with what they're learning in school. So for instance, evolution and the Big Bang are typically taught in either seventh or eighth grade. And I certainly can tell you as both a parent and as a seventh and eighth grade Sunday school teacher, there starts to be this conflict between science and faith. Right? And our kids are confronted for the first time with this really difficult dilemma, right? I'm learning these things in school. I'm learning from teachers. I trust teachers in school, but it seems to me like my teachers in school are telling me something that doesn't connect, right, with what I'm learning in church, right? And that can start to create some challenges here, and we have a responsibility to reconcile those things. In fact, bit of a non sequitur, but I'll be teaching a couple of weeks of science and the Bible and how they actually fit really well together here in a couple of weeks, because I think our young people need to hear those things. You know, our kids also start to realize that some of their friends don't have to get up on Sunday morning, right, and, you know, drag themselves out of bed and go to church. And so, you know, everything about our life of faith starts to take on some pressure and maybe some conflict. So then you get to high school, right? And, you know, high school, that load of activity becomes incredible. And honestly, I don't know how our young people do it today. In terms of keeping up with academics and their extracurricular activities, it can be really, really intense. The social pressure to conform can be really challenging. I think a good example is, I can think of a teenager, not mine, who 1 year was wearing, t-shirts with expressions and sweatpants, and then the next year they're wearing all gray tones, and the whole wardrobe changed, right? And some of that may be maturation, but it's also when they're seeing all of their peers around them, right, making those changes, there's a tremendous pressure to conform around that, right? We see that with vaping and smoking and drug and alcohol use and all of these different things, right? When you have all of your friends around you that are exploring these things, it lowers the barrier, and in many cases, whether or not they're explicitly challenging you, you just feel that intense pressure, right? Then add to all that, I mentioned the social media before, but allow me to talk about how much I really love YouTube. YouTube has many wonderful things, like how to fix your tractor, but somehow that's not what at least my youth spend their time looking at, to be honest. And then there's music, right? And when I was a teenager, there was edgy music, and there were lots of bad lyrics and things that were, I think really antithetical to being a Christian. I don't think that's changed. The format's changed, but the messages, right, those non-Christian messages have not changed. Further, right, I would argue that for most high schoolers, they really reach a point where their friends become more influential than their family, right? That's a really big inflection point. And so you've got these high school kids where I know another young person who was dating someone, and for a year, this person was just very needy. Text messages, hey, how are you? Are you there? Can you talk? Are you available? It's like, oh my gosh. And I thought that was just, I saw their phone. I thought, God, it's terrible. And so I know that they were getting kind of some coaching from mom and dad that, this person's kind of needy and maybe it's not a good relationship. And that went on and on and on for a year until their friend said, that boy's kind of needy. And they broke up, right? Because that's, that's where influence comes from. So in that period, right, in the first half of high school, we introduced confirmation. And having now been a confirmation assistant, I think 6 times, it's an awesome experience. And I did not come from a faith tradition that that did confirmation. And I think at first, when I was kind of exposed to it coming into a congregational church, it was a little weird. And I thought, well, how do you go through this structured thing and then come out the other end and make a decision? And that it feels like a forced march. And I've come to see that completely differently for our youth. What it provides is what's really difficult to do just through Sunday school. It provides an end-to-end organized narrative of how our faith developed, all the way from the creation story and how to think about the creation story and how the Old Testament provided a context for Jesus, and then why Jesus came and why that was important and why we believe, why there's credibility. It's a chance for the kids. They ask the most amazing, hard questions. I'm so glad I'm not the minister. Way not qualified to do that. But they ask these really fantastic questions that honestly I think most of us would ask also if we were in the same situation, right? And so they get this great overall perspective of what our faith is. And that's really valuable. The only shortcoming, and I know having been with Gail for many years, she did everything that she could to make it dynamic and interactive. She's a remarkable teacher, but it's still an academic experience, right? You're learning the what of being a Christian and maybe the why, but it's a whole different thing to experience it. Which brings me to mission trips and why I'm so passionate about mission trips for our youth. They can change Christianity from being a noun, I'm a Christian, to a verb, right? And it's an action. It's doing things, right? Does anybody know the term adulting? It's become popular in the last, I love that word. It's when it's 9:30 and I really don't want to and I have to go pick up a kid. I'm like, I don't like adulting. Those are those moments where you're like, well, maybe we need to create a new one that's Christianing. I'm going to go Christianing today. I don't know. See if that catches on. Feel free to, tweet that and see what happens, I guess. But But for our youth, these mission trips are an opportunity to move from that sort of academic understanding of what it means to be a Christian to a real one, to an applied one, where they can really connect the dots. And you know, you hear the phrase, be the hands and feet of Christ, right? I almost, you know, pulled from there for this worship. But that's what our young people are going out and doing. They can also see a broader perspective of what it is to be a Christian, right? And I can tell you, when you're in high school and you go off and you're suddenly with 50 or 100 other high school kids that are also Christians, it's affirming, right? It feels good. And then there's a bunch of college kids that are the leaders. We as the adults kind of sit in the back seat, by the way, during the week. And you have these college kids who are really cool and they have their lives together. Bonus points if they're attractive, because for our kids, they're like, wow, right? These are young adults who I can play forward 3 or 4 years in my own life and say, oh, well, that guy or gal's really cool. I'd like to be like them, right? That's really impactful and meaningful. You know, they're engaging in contemporary Christian music, which is, you know, for many of our kids, not something they experience every day. They're engaged in daily prayer and devotions. It is a deeply moving thing to listen to our own young people, you know, some of whom I can think of, you know, last year, maybe in eighth grade, right, volunteering to pray in front of their peers. Just think about like how that's surprising that is, right? And then just speaking in a really authentic and heartfelt way. What a great growth experience that is as a Christian in doing that, right? And then beyond that, they're also having all of these opportunities to be outside of their comfort zone, right? Groton is not maybe the most challenging community in which to live. It's a wonderful one, but maybe, you know, not the one where you're going to have daily, constant new experiences. And so for our kids, right, experiencing new cultures is awesome. Being a vacation Bible school leader is a great, you know, maturity experience. We had two teenage girls on a tin roof in West Virginia with a circular saw last year, right? Like, picture that, you know, that's, and they were really proud, right? You know, there were these pictures of them with big smiles with the circular saw. It's a little nerve-wracking, but it was all good. It was all good, you know. You know, there were other kids building a wheelchair ramp. That was my own group last year, right? And at the end of the week, we got the glory week, I admit. The week before us, they did all the, like, digging and laying the footings. And so we got to do, right, the railings and the decking. And by the time we were done, right, we have 4 or 5 teenagers looking at this wheelchair ramp and being able to say, wow, I built that. And even better, this was such a icing on the cake moment. The gentleman that we were largely building this for, Community Joe, as he was known, he came and visited with us, and he kind of made the first ceremonial trip up the ramp, right? What a great growth experience that is to really be a Christian and to care for others, whether or not they directly connect to us or not. That's really, really powerful. And through doing this, they're starting to see that our purpose here on earth, and actually it was a great kudos on this, on the kids' message this morning, right, that we're all tools and we all have a role to play, and they're getting to experience that firsthand. And I think that's just so, so compelling for us. And I think it starts to maybe change their perspective, right? In the best case, it's starting to see God in everyone. I think that's one of the big points of emphasis of City Reach, right? Is that we are all children of God. What a great revelation to be able to get into you. And maybe, just maybe, our kids will start to embrace the idea that the purpose of life is not to accumulate the most stuff, which really is a lot of what our society, right, would, you know, and the reinforcement to believe. So I titled the message today in the bulletin, Sharing Christ and Changing Lives, which is our, you know, kind of theme as a church. And of course, when we go on any of these trips, we are doing our tiny little piece, very tiny little piece, to share Christ and change lives of the communities that we serve, whether we're in Lynn, Mass, or West Virginia, or Rutland, Vermont, or Guatemala, where we're going this year, and Mary will tell you about that shortly. We, in that little 4-day window, are doing what we can to impact the lives of those around us, and that's a wonderful thing. But what I think maybe sometimes gets missed, and what I really would love you all to take away today, is that the sharing Christ and the changing lives that is the most profound is actually with our own youth. They're the ones who are experiencing Christ and having their lives changed through these experiences. And it's really powerful. And so when we think about missions and our missions budget, we think about CE, to me, this is like the capstone on the entire experience of growing up and being part of our church body, is to have this opportunity to then serve others and learn what it really, really means to be a Christian and to walk their faith. That is such a blessing. And this year, we're going to stretch further, and we're going to be going to Guatemala. And to tell you more about what we're going to be doing with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mary.
Hello. I have to say thank you to Pete because he's been a great mentor to me on these trips. This is my, let's see, I've done 5 trips so far, and this will be my 6th, but Pete's done way more than that, and it's been great to work with him. Why Guatemala, you might ask? So for some of our kids, I think the kids that are going this year, they've already done 5 trips already, which is amazing to me. They've gone from being novices who were, you know, like, I think we're staying up too late the first few nights, to now potential leaders amongst the group of younger peers and with others. As Pete said last year, I remember what we have is little mission moments throughout the day where they're given booklets and we talk about the lessons of the day. And watching our kids speak up and lead and open up about their faith and just the growth that I've seen, just even in the last year amongst those kids is really amazing to me. And I personally like going on these because of just watching what happens to our youth and how they grow and change. And I feel blessed that I can play just a little bit of a part in that. So one of the key things that we want to do is we want to take the kids out of their comfort zone. We already have in the last 5 years. We've gone to, you know, West Virginia was a bit of a out of their comfort zone, you know, a little power outage and things like that. But going to a country where English is not the main language is an experience probably a lot of us have not had. 93% speak Spanish. There's obviously an indigenous Mayan culture. There are 21 Mayan languages spoken. In the area we're going to, I'm going to try to pronounce this, Kachikel is the predominant language of the Mayan region in that area. So that'll be a huge new experience for a lot of us. Engaging people who are living very different lives than us. When you think about Groton, we're pretty cushy here. And when you think about people whose the poverty level is 53% of the people are below the poverty line, 23% are extreme poverty. What does that look like in everyday life, you know, for these people? And that's going to be a huge eye-opener for our kids. And just realizing how do we connect with people who I don't speak the same language, we don't look the same, we're not living the same way, but we're all humans, we're all God's children. No guarantee we're having air conditioning. No guarantee we're getting a shower every day. Who knows what the food's gonna be like? There's a lot of things that have potential discomfort for our kids. And the work is hard. Last year, my team, Pete didn't mention this, my team put in sidewalks. I don't know if anybody knows how much heavy lifting there is in picking up stone and sand and mixing cement and putting down sidewalks, and it was rough, and We didn't have big, bulky football players there helping us. We had, you know, we had our kids. But we did it. We put down 20 feet of sidewalk. But it was tough work. It's not a vacation. So if you think they're going for, you know, palm trees and sunshine, that is not what's happening. So where we're going exactly is Sampango, Guatemala. It's an hour outside of Guatemala City. It's rural. As I said earlier, Guatemala is 59% of the people live below the poverty line. 23% are extremely impoverished. The indigenous people are hit harder than those statistics. This is going to be a whole new culture for the kids, which is really neat. I mean, when we stay within the United States, granted there's differences, but not nearly the same as you're going to get when you get dropped into a country where everything is different. There's a lot of folklore, a lot of traditions in this area. There's a mixture of the Mayan culture, pre-Hispanic culture, Spanish, well, Spaniard culture, and African culture. So that's going to be a whole new experience. Just to talk more about religion is different. There's a Mayan spirituality sort of religion. Catholic is very big from, you know, back in the days of the Spaniards coming through and Spanish missions and such. There's also Protestantism that's growing, actually. About a third of the country is now Protestant, and apparently that's been taking hold and growing a bit. So what exactly are we going to be doing? So there are several things listed on the website. I don't know exactly what we're going to do until we get there. That's just whatever needs to be done at the time is what we're going to do. But the possibilities are, there is an orphanage, Anna Vitellio Orphanage. These are orphans who are living with HIV and AIDS. So there's a VBS program there, which, you know, our kids love. Whenever there's an opportunity to work with little kids, they love to do that. There's also construction projects going on there. So we totally could be going to the orphanage and building an addition. Or we could be playing with the kids and teaching them songs and who knows what. There is a church also that we could be helping with construction at their site as well. Let's see. There's another organization called Breaking Cycles. They provide safe permanent housing for families. So housing, good housing is at a premium there. So one of the things we could be doing is building houses for needy families who are impoverished. And once again, one more way to do our little bit in the world. So what we need from you all is your prayers above all else. You gotta pray for us and pray for our safe travels and our ability to make connections, and just bringing God closer to us is always something we appreciate. Our logistics are still in progress. There's plane flights to be made and connections down there. And we typically, some of you may know, we typically have a small retreat after that has been super meaningful for our kids, where we kind of take everything the kids have done throughout the mission trip and kind of put it all together at the end. A lot of churches, apparently what they do is they go on the 4 days of mission and send the kids back home, and they go home and they sleep for 24 hours and then life moves on. But what we do is we've been, in the past with Gail, have been having a retreat house. The kids come and they sleep and, you know, we feed them, whatever, and then we have like a little church service and we discuss what they went through and who impacted them and how they helped people, how God helped them help people. And that, to me, is the most meaningful part of all of these trips. So that's something we're still working out. So the church's support through all of that will be most helpful. We have fundraisers planned. So on December 15th, if you're around, we're going to have a Guatemalan coffee hour. So we're going to provide Guatemalan food, either homemade by ourselves, it's probably not quite as good, and Pete found a Guatemalan restaurant, so come to coffee hour that day, it should be pretty interesting. We're doing a letter writing campaign, which will be actually this afternoon. We have our first mission trip meeting, and where the kids write letters to family and friends, explaining about the trip they're going on. In January, February, I'm not quite sure of the date of this yet, we're going to do a soup fundraiser, sort of. We've had soup fundraisers in the past, so we're going to kind of take a page out of that book and do a similar thing. When we settle on a date, we'll let you know. The usual spaghetti supper that we have in March. And any other ideas for fundraisers are more than welcome. So that's just what we've come up with so far. If anybody has any ideas, please let me know, or Pete. We also want to thank the missions committee for the support that they have given us in the past. They helped subsidize part of this trip and every trip we've had. We never want the lack of ability to pay for the trip to be a reason that some child in our church can't go on a mission trip. So it's the missions committee has thoughtfully, graciously funded that, as well as, you know, and it comes from your money. And I just want to say thank you, because that should never be a reason that a kid doesn't go on a trip. These are just so impactful. I think it's just an important thing that our church does. Let me see. So I guess just to wrap up, I just want to say that the why we're taking a trip to Guatemala as opposed to yet one more place in the United States, it's just that next step that a lot of our kids are wanting at this point, I think, to just really see outside of their little comfort zone. We want to take it to the next step, and I think this is definitely the way to do it. And I hope you'll all join me in thanking the missions committee for their support, and I thank you all for your support, and we appreciate it. Thanks.